Start of interview with Sir J.P. Obeysekara on the 12th of January 1968.
You people must be united. Yeah. Otherwise, we can't give it up. Just as they did in India, between Pakistan and Hindustan, they said, you fellows must be united. And who was it at that time? Gandhi and Jinnah, I think. And they divided it up. Pakistan had East Pakistan and West Pakistan, Hindustan in the center. They're still, you know, migrating. The other day somebody told me that they're still migrating into Pakistan from Hindustan.
Did you join the National Congress here?
S.W.R.D. Singh and was a very nice man, and his name R.S.S. Kunwarn and company. I've got their book upstairs. No, I didn't join that National Congress.
But weren't you a member of council for a little while before that?
I think I did take an interest in these things, but somehow or other I fell away because I had nothing active to do there, you see. And all these fellows who were associated, I did not like. Now, nationalist movement.
What were they?
Then I tell you, they wanted it united, you see. Then they said, oh, we are united. You see, Tamils and everybody. And they promised Arun Ashram, who had worked a great deal for Ceylon reforms, and they promised him the seat after James Pierce. I don't know what they call James Pierce, president or something or other, after that. And they did not appoint him. Arun Ashram was kicked out, and they put D.B. Jayathirukkur or somebody in. And
as president?
As president, I think they called him. And it came down. But there, you see, what I say is deception. Mm-hmm. They deceived the Tamils.
Who is that they?
Our fellows in Naikan Company.
F.R. Sen and Naikan?
Not F.R., no, no.
D.S.
D.S. And company. They just did that, you see. So there's a split.
But isn't this surprising? The Senanayakas are Goigamas and Pieris, James Pieris is Karab. I thought they were not close to each other.
No, that didn't matter. That didn't matter. James Pieris, I have more to say about him, educationist and all that sort of thing. Now, oh, make a koipite, that's it, and confound it. Now I want you to read this. That's old Sorbury.
In England they are all one level?
All one.
But here there are this calf difference.
Not only that, the Tamils there, the more people here, you see, and various things.
So, yes, I see.
You see? The number of castes in Ceylon. So that, what the government says, he says here, is quite right. Parliament, this presence of Parliament will not answer. And it's all deception. Sponsors in American way.
Did you feel that the Senanayakas were against the Tamils and always scheming against them?
It's difficult to identify one and people like that, but certainly they gave offense. You see, when they promised Arun Ashram that a man who had worked so hard for them and kicked him out, there was another man and his son, and Mahadeva. He was licking their shoes and got a knighthood or something like that, you see, from the Senators and that sort of thing. But they were never put into prominent places.
Can you remember?
Now you know what they did to the Tamils here. How they burned them alive and did all sorts of things.
Can you remember a mission sent by the Congress, headed by E.T. De Silva and C. Korea to Jaffna, and they reached some agreement. Did you feel that the Senanayakas and some others were against the agreement?
No. It was a sort of agreement which they could not carry out. You see, Tamil provinces are particular that area, and the northern, you see, they wanted to, Tamils wanted Tamils taught in their schools, the car labels with the Tamil letter, all that sort of thing. Tamils wanted to cut us out altogether to be an Then, of course, there were a whole lot of Tamils in the tea estates, you see, and they were afraid that Ceylon will get swamped by the Tamils. We are a tiny little nation here. Millions of Tamils in South India. If they begin to come, well, Ceylon goes. It is out. That's what the Sikhis fellows are afraid of. You see, Tamil sort of sweep in the country. Yeah. But then, of course, votes. I say we have the voting men. I've got two sets, one earlier than the other. Now, there was this Donnamore Commission or something like that, you see.
That's right.
And Butler came. Butler was one. And what Butler? Butler was one. And there are two Butlers, one here. What's his name? Oh, Johnny Goodman.
Shields, Drummond Shields.
Now, how funny that you mentioned Drummond Shields. Now, what Butler?
Jeffrey Butler,
and the other fellow was Jeffrey Butler was the one who came out here.
Yes.
And you see, little limp. And the night before the night after that, he was dining with us. And he said, we are prepared to give you anything. You see? And I think it was they who had, so I said, this was crying out, you know, oh, there sort of nobody's trying to become somebody. They've only got 25 members. Make it 50 members, constituencies. He made 50 constituencies. But Drummond Shields, Senanayake, wanted to show how, you know, to get this parliamentary government and all that stuff. Took him up to Kandy. On the way, at Ambepusa or somewhere, or Kewal, he had some people stationed. He said, now, let's talk to some of these people. So they pulled up and talked to them about their agriculture, or whatever it was that they were doing just then, and that sort of thing, in quite intelligent answers, you see. And of course, they didn't mention any gender talk. And they said, goodbye, and we pushed off, you see. Then they went a little higher up towards Khadgar now. Another group had been stationed by Senanayake.
With the appearance of being villagers.
That's it. So there's some women there. You see? Let's talk to them. Then pulled up, talked, very intelligent, smiling. You see? So that's what they happily satisfied. They push on. Like that. He deceived Drummond Shields. When it came to discussion, and what Butler told me was, what Butler?
Jeffrey Butler.
Jeffrey Butler, and the other one was?
Nathan.
No, other Butler. Yes, there was a third man. He was neutral. Jeffrey Butler was for the Conservatives, Drummond Shields was the Labour. So Jeffrey Butler said, it was a case of give and take. I got what I wanted. I got 50 seats. And he got universal franchise.
From where did you hear this story about Senanayake station in his
name? At that time, the papers had it, papers had it, and that was a deception.
Did you hear about it confidentially from someone who knows them?
No. It was opened up. They said, oh, taking these people over and doing this, you see.
But he didn't want universal franchise?
That's it. Women and men. In England, women only had got it about 3 years earlier. you see? And their parliament was about 700 years old, from the time of signing the Magna Carta and all that sort of thing. And then, this time, universal franchise, women and men, hello! No, leave it. That's the way with these creatures. He's hungry. now we can't import horses or do anything. The poor old fellow. Then, you see, he got a universal franchise. And I, Golob! So you have the franchise work.
First pause, he referred to page 131 of Ulugala's book and to Arthur Hamilton Gordon's quotation on that page. The present pause, he referred to the front page article in the Independent News Weekly called The People's Voice of 3rd August 1951. An article which attacks the Senanayakas for raising the cry of caste and degrading Mr. Kirtiratna during the Dedigama election.
You are free to vote, you see. You can give your vote to anybody you like. And a secret ballot, and they put on their best Sunday clothes, like going to a temple, and they all came out to give the vote. See what the treatment that they had? Uh-huh. They were beaten,
but
human dung thrown on them.
By whom?
By the opposite party, Senators.
But the Singala Mahasabha was part of the UNP then?
I don't know which party it was.
Was Sir John Kothalawala also involved in this action?
Now you're drawing me out. Sir John Kothalawala, you remember, and Dudley Senanayake. Kothalawala was in the parliament, the chief man, and he would have succeeded Dudley Senanayake. Senanayake got hold of Sobri and said, put my son in if anything happens to me. You see? So, something happened to Senanayake, and Sobri, who was in England, came running down to Ceylon and put Dudley Senanayake in. Kothalawala got his backup. Then Kothalawala, with regard to this election, says, I say, I had four fellows murdered in order to get you into that Dedigama seat as a member of parliament. Now see what you're doing. He had four fellows murdered, perfectly true. We know the man who did it.
Who is that?
He lives between Minwanguna and Meerigama. I can't remember his name. Awful scoundrel. He was involved in that forgery case also, you know, forging tenderfee notes. That same man. I had so many people shot. That's what Kothalawala says, you see. So that he was for these people at this time.
But later on, you find Kirtiratna becoming a minister in Kothalawala's government.
Ah, yes.
How could he do that after this incident?
They blow hot and cold, these fellows. Mm-hmm. You see, they were against him here to put Dudley Senanayake in. Once Senanayake got in here, that fellow, in that constituency, is from Kalania, really, these Kirtiratna people, not unknown, and they were put in there. Okay. Oh yes, it's a case of up and down. Now look at Ilangan Deruka. He was kicked out, he was expected to be a minister, and now he's a minister now. In SWRD's government, he'd done a lot of work. He got five seats for SWRD and expected to be a minister, and SWRD had promised him. But he'd got all, SWRD had got all the riffraff around him, you see, in order to beat the UNP. The result, he had to oblige all those people. And this poor fellow, Ilangantheka, he had nowhere to push him in.
Ilangantheka or Iriagola?
Iriagola, yes. Somewhere down towards in the Kunagala district, Dandakam. I know him very well, jolly fine fellow. He was educated here at Gampa in this school here, to begin with. Now, you talk about Jean Kotharavala.
Yes.
Well, that is Kotharavala out and out. You see? And nothing, Kotharavala is a real free and easy fellow. He always says, I think after I talk. on the radio, I heard once, at Badulla, you see, he'd been there, and the member for that constituency was an outsider, not even me. He said, now you give me an address and a memorial and praying for this, that and the other thing. You won't get any of these things because you didn't vote for us. We said it into see. Uh-huh. Once you get to the top, you must hold the balance evenly. The fellow says, you won't get a single thing. In the memorial which they addressed, which they gave him, and he went Badulla. Then I was surprised. I thought he just said that. No. About 3 months afterwards, when they were framing the budget, do you know he had sent a letter to all the departments to say, only take up those works, bridges and this, that and the other thing, you know, of his constituencies, of his party. Sent a written notice round to all the departments. Uh-huh. Now, what are you going to do with fools like that? You see, are we fit for part of the government? Here, voters, they are told they are free, and told this, told that, and they are ill-treated when they go to vote.
What led Mr. SWRD Bandaranaike to leave the UNP?
Because Sennanayake was preparing the way for Dudley Sennanayake, for his son.
Had he promised Mr. Bandaranaike the succession in 1947?
There's no promise. He was the next in Parliament, I don't know what they call the fellow.
Leader. The House. Leader,
yes. He was the leader and he would have succeeded. But he cut off Kotharavala and SWRD knew this, that Sennanayake was going to get his knife into him. You see? Knew it. Keep it peace. He knew it. And Sennanayake was approaching the Queen's House, Governor. But before that, SWRD sent in his resignation. You see? Then they came to inquire. And from Sennanayake, oh, he's already resigned from your party. You see? That was the beach. SWRD knew this was coming and that he was going to be ousted.
As you knew him, what sort of man was SWRD?
As my brother used to say, that fellow will sell his father and mother for politics. Mm-hmm. He was a little fellow that I used to have on my knee, SWRD. You see? And when he was going to Oxford, and when he was going to the university, I told his father, either Trinity College, Cambridge, or Christ Church, Oxford. Fortnight after his father came to, I'm going to send him to Oxford. You see? Because all Ceylon people are going to Cambridge, I want to send him to Christ Church, Oxford. And before he went, I took him upstairs here, and I showed him what he should do there, join the Union Society. You see? And graduate. And the speeches that we made at Cambridge at the Union Society, I showed him those, you see, the subjects and the people who taught. And SWRD followed that. He went to the Union. And nobody took any notice of him, you see. Seats are arranged like that, like Parliament, Foreign. And he couldn't catch the chairman's eye. At last one day, he caught the chairman's eye on a subject which he knew, about which the others did not know. Something in the colonies or something like that. Got up and made a speech. You see? Then they knew that there was something in this fellow. Then he made one or two other speeches. The chairman called on him, you see? And then one, he had the paper with him and said, Bandaranaike, that is the way to talk. And sent it to him. He had that little bit of paper with him all the time. He showed it to me. By one of the people, you know, who had risen high in later years, and some of them, I think, during the war, they got killed off and so on, and had their names, and some of those old friends which he made at the Union. And then he said, oh, if I'd been another year at Oxford, I would have been president, you see. Mm-hmm. But he was secretary or something, definitely.
But what were his political views when he came back?
Oh, there's no politics. All he wanted to do was to become prime minister. That's all. And he would have carried on. He would have carried on. He sent his mother and father forward. And the poor, and when he formed this society of all the scallywags, you know, these are different things, and emperors, and this, that, and the other crowd, Philip Goulon and a whole lot. When he got them all together under his wing, he couldn't get rid of them. They had to put him in, you see. But they were loyal to him. Put him in. But they want ministries. They wanted ministries. And then, there you are.
Yeah. Mm. I was very interested in the story you told me about Senanayake's deception on the Donimo Commission. But it doesn't... I can't quite understand it, because in the Congress, he opposed the universal franchise. He was against it. But he was practicing this deception to show the commission that these people are intelligent.
He wanted the franchise, you see. But not this universal franchise, you see. Women and men all at once, with one stroke. And Butler got his 50 in there, and then of course this 50. And Butler said, we are going to try out the committee system here, you see. And if it is successful, we want to have it even in England. We are not satisfied with the English parliamentary government. That's what Butler told me. And they had these committees, 50 means about 49, seven committees, 7 times 7, 49. Hmm. Instead of bribing one fellow, the minister, they bribed all seven. Then they appointed that whatever, L.M. Silva, you know, who was afterwards in England,
yeah,
practicing and that sort of thing, to inquire into this bribery. Only one man commission. He went here, there, everywhere, government officers, you know, record office here, there, everywhere, trying to prove this. Of course, fellow gives a bribe, he won't come forward and say, I gave a bribe. He won't come forward and say, I gave a bribe. And the other fellow won't say, I took a bribe. So nobody gave a bribe, except when he got to the education department. And there was a poor fellow, I knew him, he was my teacher too, a man called Tambaya, in Batikaro. And the school teachers, you know, they gave evidence that for promotion or one thing or another, or for transfers, that they tried. And that was the only evidence. And
in the elections in those days, say 1931, 1936, after universal franchise was introduced, did you feel that some of these candidates used to bribe the Ratemahatmyas, Korales, village headmen, or the big shots, and tell them, here, have this money, you get these people to vote for me?
No.
They didn't do that, sir.
No. Oh, our villages are too wise. Much too wise. Now you're coming into the education department. I don't know whether you had it in that. Did you put education down there? Education in Ceylon. We had Kuala.
Can you remember anything about the 1915 riots?
Good God.
Long ago. The dominion of the Kenyan provinces is vested in the sovereign. Saving the Dadigas, Disaves, Mohotales, and all other chief and subordinate native headsmen, the rights, privileges, and powers of their respective officers.
All that down. And the.
So what were you going to say about the headman system?
Headman system. No, education. Yeah. Yes, education.
What were the comments?
Have you grasped that?
Before I read this, I was wondering whether you could make your own comments on the headman system. How would you assess the headman system?
They ended by bribery and all that sort of thing, corruption. We talk about that, the headman system. See, the education.
Yes.
We were prosecuting people for not sending their children to school.
Yes.
Is that the one there? We had attendance officers appointed.
Yes, that's right. You must have been in the council then, at this time. Were you a member of the Legislative Council?
No, I was not. But my brother was for about 2 years.
Brother being forester?
Surely, no, his cousin. He was a cousin of mine. Then that's all. Uh-huh. Only I wanted to show you that we were prosecuting the parents on our children. When I first came here, these fellows, they only put their finger marks. They couldn't sign their own name.
Yes.
But now there isn't a single man who can't sign his own name. They're all educated. Now, we had attendance officers. 50 rupees each they were paid. And according to those rules there, they prosecuted the people for not sending their children to school. Then we had a thing called Social Reform Society, and Ananda K. Kumar Swami, I don't know whether you knew him, they used to celebrate his day for him also in Colombo once upon a time. He was the Yemenite and some other thing, kind of stone.
Yes.
He discovered that, and very nice man. And we, in the Social Reform Society, we had, not Yemenite, Thorianite and Thorite. Those are two things that he discovered when he was doing that sort of work, geology. Then I pressed at that Social Reform Society meeting that fellows who are sent here, the civil servants and so on from England, are selected from about 80 million people. These fellows are picked men who are sent out to the colonies here. Now we have only got 3 million people. Let us sweep the crowd, you see, and get what we can. We've got fellows with brains, you see. And then, I was pressing this. Then W. A. D. Silva became something in the parliament, and Denham, he was the director of education. He got around him, and we had 3 scholarships, Denham scholars, 10 scholarships for the whole island, you see. Denham scholars to be sent to the Colombo schools and so on and educated. And afterwards, I had one specially for this school called Prince of Wales. Prince of Wales had come that year. We collected the money from the villagers so that to interest them. And I put in an equal amount and I gave it over to government with that interest to give, in addition to the 10, to give another one for Singapore East. So we had a Prince of Wales scholar here. And that's how we encourage things, you see, in the education in that line. Denham was all for that. In fact, it was Denham who started the scouting in this area. He brought a fellow from Kandy somewhere there who knew scouting from Maharaj Dharma Raja College, here, this MJS Serum, and we pushed the scouting movement forward.
Can you tell me something about the civil service in those days?
Then these 11 scholars, I said, look here, Denham, I've got a fight. You say these poor fellows, give them scholarships in the villages, put in Juno of about 9-10, send them to Colombo and educate them. And after that, when they get appointments, who's going to support them? You see? To whom are they going to go for advice in this, that, and the other thing? There'll be competition, you see, for promotion and this, that, and the other thing. These fellows, they're left alone. And then you know what he did? He said, we'll call them so-and-so scholar, so-and-so scholar, so-and-so scholar, you see? So that the scholar will be attached to him and he'll look after that body and see to his interests, you see? And the one he saddled on me was Samanya Pasyal. There, the poor girl. He went up and he went to, he got employment in the Ceylon Turf Club and he was working there. And you may remember the Turf Club robbery case. This boy, the insurance company wouldn't insure it unless they knew the character. Came to me for a character. Morley was then the secretary of Turf Club. So I gave a character and they appointed him. And every race day, he makes about 300 or 400 rupees. Taking this money, you see, and depositing it at the police station or something, if it's a weekday, to the bank. And he was in the carriage. They got a carriage, just like the usual one that comes to take this money. They took it round, he said. It's funny, we are going round this way, we usually go that way. And opposite the museum, they shot him. They wanted him to get out. Box of money here, by him, you see, get out. He wouldn't get out. They shot him through the neck, you see. Then they raised him up and chucked him out in the drain, bleeding. And the car went round that, round the Victoria Park, and near about Rowlands, the police picked up the revolver with which he had shot. Somehow, I don't know how it was found on the ground. This car went around Putlamay and, you know, they murdered the driver about 13 miles between Putlamay and Rajapura on the roadside.
You tell me something about the British civil service. What sort of chaps came out? What was their attitude? What do you think of the structure?
Oh, that was a civil service, yeah. Now, Arun Ashram was the first Sri Lankan civil servant. You see, then Paul Pieris, you see, he was the second, he was Singhji's. They passed into civil service in case. And there's a British civil service, then they have got a civil service for India and Ceylon and towards Burma. Those that fall short of India come to Ceylon and the others. They're all examinations, not only examinations, they had men who had been in recommended. Not recommended, I think.
Nominated.
Useful word. No. On other grounds, you see. Yeah, I recommend so and so. You see, respectful fellow being educated at Eton or Harrow or some of the public schools and well brought up under good influence, all that sort of thing. They recommend them that way. And appoint those fellows because they are really first rate, the fellows who came out here. The civil service.
Were there any of the civil servants who struck you as being particularly able? Can you remember any?
The able ones generally rise, you see, to the top when they come to the Western Provinces, government agents or something.
Now, what sort of chap was Newnham?
He was a man who was good at writing, for magazines and one thing or another. And his wife was also that. He was very, very good at writing. Oh, first rate. And, you know, anything he did. And there were some of these other civil servants also. J.B.
What about Reed? Reed. Thomas Reed.
What was he? I don't know.
He was mayor of Colombo after Newnham, I think, before Newnham.
Oh, yes, very nice man. And with the family, little children. And he was very good. He was very good, very good, very good. In fact, Queen's House had taken him up. And, you know, he was very, from here, didn't he go as a governor or something to another colony somewhere? Those good men generally.
What about Fletcher? He was here only for a short time, but he was a top man, colonial secretary. Murkiston Fletcher.
He came out here as governor afterwards.
Yes.
For a short time. And he was married to a lady who had relations here in the tea estate, at Fletcher. Oh, he came. Oh, he was first rate. And he wanted to deal in a particular way. But he found these fellows are at sixes and sevens, and you couldn't do anything with them. They wanted this and that and the other thing.
Who is it?
The other civil servants and people, you see. He found he couldn't do what exactly as he liked. He was a good man and able. And he was transferred from here to Burma or something like that as a governor, I think, and he told me. And they offered me this and I accepted it. And I'm going. But when I began to look into it, I found I had nothing to do but rum running. America had gone, you know, with Woodford Johnson and so on. They'd given up drink. So all this rum and things that they make in Ireland and Scotland, whiskies, he had to steadily run this into the mainland from those islands. There seems to be nothing to do there in where I'm going, except being rum running. That's all they did. He quite good in his way, but nothing extraordinary.
What about, were you here in 1915 when the riots broke out? Muslim Sinhalese riots?
Oh, don't talk about it. Oh,
it was terrible, was it?
Oh, that's year Chalmers had hired leased about 3 bungalows in Kandy, and he wanted to celebrate the anniversary of the British taking over Ceylon. That ordnance chart showed you, taking over, prepared it. Then war broke out, this that and the other thing, and he had to give it up. And his 2 sons, I think they were both shot in the war, and he lost his head. And as I said always, is the thing, I had the penal code translated into Sinhalese at that time. Because these villages, they didn't know, do you see, they were charged with this, that, and the other crime. They don't know what the offense is even. And housebreaking, burglary, and this, that, and the other. So, what they ought to have done was, Collins was the magistrate there in Kandy, to get the police to shoot. The district judge there told Collins, order these fellows to fire. It broke out at Gumbola.
Yes.
You see, and went up there. Shoot. Hello? Police to fire. You see? Collins was a new civil servant in Kandy. He was afraid to give such an order. Because magistrate has got to read the riot act and order the fellows to fire if they don't scatter. Oh, 9 people or something like that, unlawful assembly, you see. You read the riot act. I had it right here. That was in 1916, was it? Yes, it must have been those riots. And then it would have been in hush and nothing would have taken place. But it flared up and it came all around here. These Moorish houses breaking, broken and all that sort of thing.
Who were the people who did the attacks? Who participated in the assaults and looting and so forth?
Well, these Senakas and fellows, they had prepared the country, you know, with these Mahajana Sabhas and one thing and another.
Temperance movement.
Not that. Mahajana Sabhas, you know, to interfere with the government and this, that, and that, to do what they like. And there was a sabha established here at Ratanapuram.
So you feel that the Senanayakas were behind this too, the attack on the Moors?
Oh, no. But the people were, roused. You see? What do they call it? Mob psychology.
Mm-hmm.
You see? They've been preaching all around this thing and there. And when they found that they could loot a boutique and get some stuff out of it, thrown out in the street. So I got with an archie and six of my headmen here to this junction. And I said, now put the hood down, stand up and read this riot act. The clause, we had no riot act. The clauses of the penal code which corresponded to the riot act, dispersing a crowd and that sort of thing. So they went and they stood there and read this out. The crowd scattered, not a soul to be seen. Then, at about 11 o'clock at night, they came with broken metal on the roadside, stones, throwing it all down the road, to get these headmen and fellows up. Of course, I had no authority to shoot, you see. I had no guns, nothing at all. It was only blood. And then they looted. So I wrote at once and I said, the only thing is to shoot. Charmers, he was a fine fellow. He did everything that I told during the riots. We had a camp down at Dompe. Everything I said, he carried out. In fact, all the guns had been collected from the villages. There was about a couple of hundred. I told the government agent who was there. I said, take these guns and throw them in the sea. Next time they'll come out with their guns. Next time they riot. Uh-huh. You see?
Did you meet Chalmers personally? And?
Oh, no. Mm. He and what's his name? The three of them, they were at the head.
Stubbs?
Stubbs, and Chalmers, and the other one was one of the judges, I think.
Bertram.
Three of them. You see? All the guns went over the breakwater, nobody knew where the guns were. My guns, I didn't deal with them at the Kalcheri, but I said, my revolver that I'm not going to give at any price to anybody. I said, you can keep that for your own personal safe. So now wait a bit. What are we coming to? Oh,
right.
Then, yes, I said, only thing is shoot. Well, about a fortnight went, and here at Pasyala, the sub-inspector of police, he locked himself up in a room with a revolver in his hand, afraid of his life, all rioting, looting. A van came racing along, stopped. You see, Punjabis inside. Chama said, why to India to send Punjabis? He said, there are those Indian fellows, these Moorish fellows and so on, they are all fighting for the British. And here we are allowing the Moors to be robbed and ill-treated. So down came the Moors. All the fellows down, fire. You see? Three fellows down with bags of rice in the line. So I had to go and hold the inquest. The Punjabis, those who have the beard and big turban and that sort of thing, ordered down from the van and said, shoot. Then,
was there a British officer commanding them?
Oh yes. We don't understand their language, you see. So, Dr. Block, he was here, he cut up the bodies and he found the bullets and brought them and placed them on the table. And the officer said, may I have a look at one of those bullets? I said, yes, what is that? So he took it and he says, did you see? That bullet has expanded. That bullet has expanded. We did not issue dum-dum bullets to those fellows, soft-nosed bullets. It shows that they have done what I had ordered them to do, to shoot low. This bullet has hit the ground and ricocheted and hit that man. When a bullet ricochets, it splits. And this shows clearly, because they were not issued dum-dum bullets, but this bullet has split. I said, keep it if you like. Keep the things if you like. And he did that. And then I just recorded, shot by police. And they were buried. Even the relations hadn't a word to say. Yeah, they were caught red-handed with a bag of rice. You see? Mitrishan. Now, that's the sort of thing to do. Now, by St. Thomas's College and all that sort of thing, these things came.
Did you feel that these riots were anti-government?
No. Oh, dear, no.
But then, didn't the British feel that?
No. Once it spread like that, you know, they took no notice of the law. You see? Our people are usually law-abiding, good people in the villages. Headman order comes from the kachari, and that's conveyed to the people, and they are obedient, and they do. No trouble at all. You see? But this, there's no law. You see? You'd have had to have, what is it called, emergency.
Who were the ringleaders in this area, in Veyanguda?
There were no ringleaders. Just the mob. Everybody was doing it, so they also did it. And the crime was, they were wanted to punish somebody. Government, you know, these three Johnnies, government and so on, to punish, to show that they've been doing something against these leaders. We had no leaders. And three of my headmen, 35 year service headmen down Pugoda, they were convicted. No evidence, you know, they cooked up evidence by the murder. Sometimes I saw the man, said, this evidence, go in the village, go and get some fresh evidence. And three headmen, they were hanged. These three girls.
You feel they were innocent?
Oh, totally innocent. Because it's 30, 35 years service, old fellows, they were taken because the government wanted some of the fellows punished. And they got hold of these headmen, and I saw the fellows recording evidence there at Dumpe camp. You see? We were there for a fortnight. And recording evidence, and this evidence, you know, couldn't bring evidence.
They told the...
Yes, the judge tells Moors, go and bring evidence, fresh evidence. This evidence which you brought, but there is no evidence at all. And cooked up evidence. In fact, there was one fellow from Atangala here, he came with a long list of things, you see, all that he lost from his booty, drawn up in Kadamba municipality somewhere down. And he was doing this. I was there, I was in the back, I was under the clerks working, and this chap, and the judge, I forgot now who it was, one of these assistant accommodations, and he was sitting there, and when he said, I saw this fellow. He was giving evidence, it's more. Then I went up to the judge and I said, sir, look here. That fellow at Atangala, a Sinhalese man, had protected this Moor. You see, look at the list of things. So many bullock carts are full of his goods from the boutique. All safely kept and given back. You see, I think he had an iron safe into which he put a 10 rupee note or something and locked it up. So that if the burglars come and open this, he'll only find 10 rupees in it. It's this long list. And then, shut him. And signed by the same Moor, who is now claiming. And the Pharaoh grew pale. Sure. He fainted.
The Moor?
Moor, yes. He saw it, you see. This is his own list which he had given, and thanked that man for having protected him. About three or four bullock cart loads of things which are protected. Now you see, it was like that in those riots. And then afterwards, I don't know what happened.
Who were the Silanis who were advising the government at that stage?
There's my uncle, you know, Forrester's father.
Christopher.
Christopher. And Ramanathan. Ramanathan. And after he went to England, Ramanathan, during the war, through the Mediterranean with his son Mahadeva, you know, to fight the case for the Sinhalese. After all that, and after having promised them that they will put a Tamil in to succeed James Pierce, they did not do it. Now, that's why I'm angry.
Tell me about the election earlier, election fight between Ramanathan on the one hand and Marcus Fernando for the educated Ceylonese seat.
Yes, yes, yes. My educated Ceylonese seat, yes. Forrest's father, he got into that. And Senviratna, JDL Senviratna, mm-hmm. You know, he was appointed after that, Forrest's father. He said, I'm not going to talk about that, put you to seat. After that, it would be there.
After Ramanathan?
No. Senviratna. JDL Senviratna. But anyhow, he went.
Who said this about the polluted seat?
Forrest's father, SCO of a cigarette. But what did you ask?
About Fernando and Ramanathan, educated Ceylonese seat, 1912.
That was very interesting. They were having meetings, you know, kind of a public hall, that old building, there and that sort of thing. So the governor told my uncle, SWD's father, Maha, these fellows are fighting. I don't know what to do. This fellow's name, that fellow's name. I said, well, sir, this evening's chairman is Dr. W.G. Rockwood. You see, William Gabriel Rockwood. He is a chairman, this year. Operator him. If he's good enough to be chairman, do you see, of this kind of thing. Chairman of this large gathering, whatever it was in favor of one party or the other, of it. The governor thought, that's a good idea. Well, go and ask him whether he'll accept it. So he got in his trap, drove out to Rockwood, and told Rockwood, look here, dear chap, you're going to be offered this, don't refuse it, accept it. He could say, what? I'm no lawyer, I know nothing. My profession is this. I can't, impossible. He said, no, you must. It'll be offered to you. So it was offered, and W.G. Rockwood accepted it. And he was a member of Parliament. And he did very well. He did very well. You know, David Rockwood's father.
Later on, you found this voting for an educated Ceylonese seat. And what is surprising is that many people among the Sinhalese voted for Ramanathan and not for Fernando.
Yes, I mean to say they were open-minded. Mm-hmm. Fernando was a sort of outcast picture. I don't want to talk much about gold medalist and all that sort of thing in England, in his profession. And he married one of the De Souza girls. With money, or that sort of thing. But he was not the man. No. And afterwards he turned agriculturalist and opened up lands here and there from government and had roads open to Chirao, to Putnam, to railway open, all that sort of thing. All fudge and nonsense. No, he was not the man. He was no man. Ramaji Rakul, he said, he was a fun. Then Fernando, I knew the man, very nice socially, and talks nicely and pleasantly, and that's why we used to meet every Sunday at Peter Serum's place there in Corpete, Sunday evenings, and that sort of thing. But he was a funny thing. Now he and C.M. Fernando were brothers. One day I told him, one of the ADCs there, I was going to tell him, I said, those fellows are the illegitimate sons of Governor Barnes. Do you see? The portrait. This fellow went and told the governor that. They were good looking, do you see? And quite different to the other fishermen, quite good looking. Governor asked me, Maha, is this true what I hear? That there was a painting there of King's Pavilion, painting, we were admiring that and that sort of thing. And then I made this remark, do you see, and they said he was good looking. So I said, I couldn't say anything, but I just laughed and I said, so that's the talk. The Englishman offspring.
Can you remember E.A.P. Vijayaratna? What community is he from? Kegala.
Very nice man. I don't know what community he is. Very nice fellow. advocate. I think he went abroad also. I think they sent him...
On commission?
On commission, yes. Yes, and he came back, we had a meeting, and he talked. And he said, into Australia they won't allow Sri Lankans to go, excepting some 30 or 40 people every year. Something like that, they ought to let more people in. The Australian High Commissioner there. Then they all looked at him and said, what are you going to say? And they said, we Sri Lankans are locked out of Australia. Then this High Commissioner, who is a great big tall fellow, but he was clever. He said, well, you don't allow a single Tamil to come into Ceylon, but we allow 36 of your fellows to come into our country. And sat down. EAP. What's his name?
EAP.
Vijayanand. Oh, yes. He was quite a good fellow.
What about Gunasinghe? Did you know him at all? He was a firebrand in those days.
You mean the fellow with the strikes?
Yes, that's right.
I got to know him later on. Mm-hmm. What I said was he ought to have been born 30 years earlier than he did.
Why?
Because these people, the coolies in the harbour and that stuff, were underpaid. You see? I said they ought to have been paid more. The highest should have been about 300 rupees. And chief justices and so on, and come down, and these people should get so much. Do you see? About 30 rupees a month or something like that. No, straight up. Should be like that. And this fellow should have been born 30 years ago. he was good. And of course, at that time, of course, setting up people, strike and that sort of thing, did appeal to people they didn't like, this sort of fuss. But at the same time, I think he got hold of the stick at the right end. He was slapped one day at Maradana, warden de Serum, his brother, he was in the police. Gunasinghe was coming with a gang. He wanted to scatter the gang. Gunasinghe gave a slap on the high road. Gunasinghe held his head. Nothing. He had a pair of tusks, elephant tusks. If you go in here, you'll find the portrait there of my grandfather. This is my mother's father.
End of interview with Sir J.P. Oboyesekara on the 12th of January 1968.